You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Quorum is present. Thank you. I want to welcome everyone to the Appropriations Committee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent. Members, we have six bills on our agenda today. We're going to start off with HB 6005 by Representatives Duggan and Daniels. Representative Duggan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. Members, this bill is a claim bill for $1.85 million to compensate Mr. Dubois for 37 years of wrongful incarceration, including 3 years on death row. That is the bill.
Thank you, members. Are there questions on the bill? Representative Williams, for a question.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, I didn't hear the amount that is being requested.
Representative Duggan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's $1.85 million, representing $50,000 a year for each year of wrongful incarceration.
Are there any further questions? Members, any further questions? Seeing no further questions, is there anyone in the audience wishing to speak? Robert Dubois. Mr. Dubois, you recognize?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, Mr. Duggan, for sponsoring my bill. For 37 years, I was incarcerated for something I didn't do. So in 2020, DNA evidence was found, proved my innocence, and found the two perpetrators. So since then, I've been working two jobs at a golf club, doing renovations, and just trying to keep my life back on track. So I'm very grateful that you all would hear this.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Members, we are now in debate. Is there debate? Is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Duggan, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to briefly observe that clearly this was a manifest injustice, and the judicial system did its part to rectify it. They identified it, and they released him, and they vacated his judgment. It is now our part. It's our turn to play our part. We can apologize, and we can compensate him, and I ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leake?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade? Bell?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hawkins? Hunchowski?
Yes.
Joseph? Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers? Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko? Williams?
Yes.
Thank you, members. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show HB 6005 reported favorably.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Dubois. We'll move next to House Bill 6007 by Representative Abbott. Representative Abbott, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 6007 is a claims bill that seeks relief for the estate of Ms. Molly Parker. Ms. Molly Parker was a 39-year-old female who was a mom of a 4-year-old and a wife who, on December 12, 2019, was traveling on Highway 2 in Jackson County when a dump truck driven by a DOT employee and a DOT dump truck fully loaded failed to yield at an intersection, coming into the intersection, causing a wreck with Ms. Parker. Ms. Parker passed away from those injuries on December 22nd, 2019, leaving behind again that husband and a 4-year-old son. Department of Transportation investigated the collision and found and determined that Ms. Parker had no fault and it was completely DOT's fault. They also testified to that in the trial. On June 23rd, 2022, a final judgment was made for Ms. Parker's estate in the amount of $6.25 million. Department of Transportation has already paid out $300,000, leaving $5.95 million that the department has agreed upon. And that's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Abbott. Members, there is an amendment, but we're going to move into questions on the bill. Are there questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, Representative Abbott, you're recognized to explain Amendment Number 1, Barcode 679641.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just changes and directs payment from the State Transportation Fund instead of the General Revenue Fund.
Thank you. Are there questions on the amendment? Members, are there questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? Seeing no public testimony on the amendment, is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Abbott, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
I'll simply close, but this is just the right thing to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? We have one appearance card from Jacqueline Corcoran, who waves in support. We're now in debate. Members, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Abbott, you're recognized to close on the bill.
I'll waive close, Mr. Chair.
Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure? Yes. Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Brasada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hawkins? Hunchowski?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf? Silvers? Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you, members. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show HB 6007 reported favorably.
Thank you,
Representative Abbott. Next up is HB 6001 by Representative Gottlieb. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm proud to present 6001, which is the Leonard Cure Relief Bill. It's sad that it comes out of my county. I want to let you know what happened to Mr. Cure, who spent 16 years in Florida State Prison. First and foremost, the 17th Judicial Circuit State Attorney's Office made a determination after an independent investigation that Mr. Cure was most likely innocent. Mr. Cure had an ATM receipt showing that he was 7 miles away at the time that this robbery was committed. The identification of the alleged perpetrator was inconsistent with Mr. Cure's appearance, especially as it related to the teeth of the person who committed the crime. But most importantly, what happened to Mr. Cure is a true travesty of justice, members. There was a photo pack, and so that you understand how a photo pack or a lineup is done when we don't have physical people at a lineup, we use photo packs where we put in the offender and then 5 detractors. In the photo packs in this case, Mr. Cure was the only person depicted. So he was all 6 individuals in one, he was all 3 in the other. That leads to a 100% certainty that Mr. Cure would be identified. Mr. Cure spent 16 years in prison. There was no physical evidence. This was at a point in time in the Broward Sheriff's Office where they had what's called a power track scandal. Most importantly, members, Mr. Cure's situation was vetted by the House Special Master, and the Special Master found that there was clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Cure was actually innocent. He deserves the $817,000 for the 16-plus years he spent in prison. I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Gottlieb. Members, are there questions on the bill? Representative Williams, for a question on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Out of the $817,000 that's requested, is anything other, any other funding put in place for mental health coverage for this victim?
Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Let me take one. I don't believe so. Actually, there may be a piece I've forgotten that, so I'll get back to you on it. But I have spoken to Mr. Cure. I met him personally in the Broward County Courthouse. He lives outside Florida now and is doing very well, but I'll look on that because I don't recall.
Are there any further questions? Seeing no further questions, there are no amendments. Excuse me. There are no amendments. No one in the audience wishing to testify. Members, we are in debate. We are in debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized to close on the bill.
I'm going to waive close.
Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure? Yes. Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll? Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Brasada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hawkins? Hunchowski?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Yes. Rummel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoeff?
Yes.
Silvers?
Skidmore? Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you, members. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show HB 6001, reported favorably. Next up, HB 7061 by Representative Koster. Representative Koster, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, Committee. Over the last 25 years, Florida's child welfare system has changed with an increased focus on prevention and providing services to families, including how we do child protective investigations, which is the front door to our child welfare system. HB 7061 transfers all child protective investigation responsibilities from our seven sheriff's offices that currently exercise this responsibility back to DCF during the next fiscal year. This is supported by both the sheriffs and DCF. The bill specifically describes how the transfer will proceed, addressing issues like employees transition to DCF if they so choose, how records and physical assets will be handled, and also make some conforming changes. The sheriffs have worked hard in our state to protect our children through these child protective investigations, as they do every day in their criminal justice work. We do thank them for the work they've done and look forward to their continued support of DCF moving forward. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Koster, having explained the bill, are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Joseph, for a question of the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it just for the next year?
Representative Koster, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The transition is going to take place over the next year, but then it'll be a permanent transition.
Are there any further questions of the sponsor? Seeing no further questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. We'll go into public testimony. First up, we have Matthew Dunnigan from the Florida Sheriff's Association, waives and support. Next up, we have John Paul Fiore from the Department of Children and Families, waives and support. Seeing no further testimony, we're now in debate. Members, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Koster, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Waive close, Chair.
Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Dale?
Yes.
Benjamin? Brannon?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hawkins? Honchowski?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoeff?
Yes.
Silvers? Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Thank you, members. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show HB 7061 reported favorably.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Next up, we have CS for HB 1259 by Representative Kennedy. Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to present the bill. Members, just a little forecasting here. We do have a strike all amendment, two other amendments to the amendment, so I'll give you a little leeway on questions as we move through the amendments. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and Committee. I'll be presenting a strike-all amendment for CSHB 1259, which maintains the bill's underlying provisions for charter school capital outlay and removes from the bill provisions related to higher education
Kennedy,
construction.
Give me one sentence on the main bill, and then we'll get in the right posture so you can introduce the strike-all.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I am presenting today CS for HB 1259.
Thank you. Seeing no questions on that, members, we're going to go straight into the strike all amendment. Now, Representative Kennedy, you're recognized to explain the strike all.
Thank you, sir. To respond to feedback from members on charter school capital outlay, we've added the following provisions to the strike all. In regards to concern about disposition of property acquired with public funds, the amendment provides charter schools attest in writing that if the school ceases operation, any unencumbered funds and all equipment and property purchased with public funds will revert in order, in accordance with existing law, to the district in the case of district charters. And to prohibit self-dealing, the amendment prohibits charter schools from receiving capital outlay if a member of the governing board or his or her spouse has an interest in or is an employee of the lessor, and requires that any purchase, lease purchase, or lease be at the appraised value as determined by an independent Florida licensed appraiser. Additionally, the amendment clarifies that charter lab schools are ineligible for charter capital outlay. Current law under statute 1002.32 already provides state funding for capital improvement of charter lab schools, as lab schools are not authorized to levy taxes and are 100% state funded. And that, Mr. Chair, is the strike call.
Thank you, members. We're going to move into questions on the amendment, but I'm going to remind you that we also have some amendments to the amendment, so we will have give you some leeway on the questions as we move down the road. So are there questions on the strike all amendment? Representative Joseph, for a question on the strike all amendment.
I'm not sure if one of the amendments to the amendment deal with the reversion criteria. If it does, then I can hold off my question.
Well,
does one of the amendments to the strike all deal with reversion?
We're going to give you a little leeway, so even if it doesn't, you're going to be able to come back and ask your question.
Okay, so just ask. So don't ask now. Or
don't ask now.
Okay.
That's the message I'm sending. Representative Driscoll, to ask now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think this relates to the strike all, which is, could you talk about taking out the higher education flexible funding provisions and why that seemed to be the right policy choice?
Representative Kennedy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard in the last committee that it was important to be able to deal with those separately, so those have actually been removed, so we're dealing today only with the charter school funding portion.
Are there any further questions on the strike all amendment? Seeing no further questions on the strike all amendment, we have an amendment to the amendment. Representative Masullo, you are recognized to explain your amendment to the main amendment, barcode 152667. Representative Masullo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment removes the Institute of Risk Management and Insurance from the bill. It's being considered in other legislation moving through the process.
Thank you, members. Are there questions on the amendment? To the amendment. Seeing no questions, is there testimony on the amendment to the amendment? Okay. Seeing no public testimony on the amendment to the amendment, is there debate on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment to the amendment, Representative Masullo, you're recognized to close.
Waive close.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. Representative Masullo, you are recognized to explain your second amendment to the main amendment, barcode 028807.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a technical amendment related to charter schools in the workplace and those charter schools that are authorized in municipalities. Because of their specific purpose, the governing boards of those charter schools may be comprised of mayors and or city commissioners and other employees of the municipalities that lease the facility. And that is the amendment.
Thank you, members. Are there questions on the second amendment to the amendment? Questions, Representative Joseph, on the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. What exactly does the amendment do with respect to these municipal employees?
Representative Masullo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that question, Rep. Joseph. Basically, there are certain municipalities, for instance, Coral Springs, Pembroke Primes, Cape Coral, Aventura, and soon to be Pompano Beach, that have individuals that are employed in those particular municipalities that may have, that would be on the governing board and of, or possibly actually be involved to be able, it's a little complicated, but they would actually be involved. And so you want to reduce the conflict of interest for them.
Thank you, members. Any further questions on the second amendment to the amendment? Seeing no further questions, we do have public testimony. Raina Brown, City of Aventura. Waves in support. Lauren Jackson, City of Pembroke Pines. Waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony on the second amendment to the amendment, we're now in debate. Is there debate? We're in debates. You're in for debate. Okay, give me, all right, you're recognized, Representative Honchowski.
Thank you, Chair, and I just want to thank Representative Masullo for this good amendment, making sure that the municipal charters are not getting caught up in an unintended consequence since they serve so many of our communities so well. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gottlieb, in debate.
Thank you, Chair, and I essentially had the same comment. I represent Pembroke Pines, and I know that if the staff had not caught this, they would have been negatively impacted. So I thank Chair Masullo and staff for catching that and fixing that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further debate on the second amendment to the amendment? Seeing no further debate, Representative Masullo, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These municipalities actually own the charter schools, and so this amendment basically reduces the conflict of interest of those individuals that work for them.
Thank you, Representative Masullo. Having closed, we'll now call the roll. We'll now take a vote. All those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. Show the amendment to the amendment adopted. We are back on the strike all amendment as amended. On the strike all amendment, we're in public testimony. On the strike all amendment, we have Chris Moya, Charter Schools USA. Wish to speak, you are recognized.
There we go. Thank you, Chair. Just wanted to speak to the amendment as a whole. Essentially, Florida today has a separate and unequal education system. Let that sink in. As a matter of policy, charter schools, if you look at them as a system, are 70% minority and 50%+ free and reduced lunch. And as a matter of policy, that child, that parent surrenders 20 to 30% of their educational funding simply because the parent exercised choice. This bill goes a long way to fix that. It begins to fix that. There have been some questions about 2017, why 2017 was chosen as far as the year to mark a line. That year, the state tried to rip the Band-Aid off and share the money equally of 1.5. Unfortunately, there were some districts that were over-leveraged. So the legislature placed that date and time and gave the districts 6 years to get their finances in order. You will hear some debates in past committees and maybe some questions today about buildings. The fact of the matter is, this isn't about buildings, it's about students. A common misconception is that capital outlay is only for buildings. During COVID, we all learned about the digital divide for minority students. Again, charters are 70% minority. Fact of the matter is, one of the uses, often one of the uses, and permitted by law, is actually software, tablets, technology. So to be against this policy would be to say we want to continue the digital divide amongst minorities and poor students by not allowing them to have the funding that goes towards technology and tablets. Lastly, there has been conversation, I've received a lot of questions about whether or not the school districts can afford this. Since 2017, the revenue derived from 1.5 mil statewide has gone from $1.9 billion to $4.1 billion. During that time, to give you one example, Broward County has gone from roughly 220,000 students to 207,000 students. So less students. Their budget in 2017 was about $3.1 billion. Today it is $5.3 billion. On average, it was $15,000 per student in 2017. Today it's $20,000 per student with less students. So the districts can't afford to share this, mostly because of the policies you all have passed, making property values go through the roof. Thank you, and I'm here for questions if anyone has any.
Thank you, Mr. Moya. Members, I do understand there are a couple lingering questions on the main bill, so we're not gonna ask questions of the public, but we will ask questions of the sponsor. So feel free to direct any questions you may have to the sponsor. Are there any questions on the bill as amended? Thank you. Representative Driscoll? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about the amendment to the amendment that I think Rep. Masullo had put on, pulling out that provision for the Institute of Risk Management at UCF. So what's going to happen to that? Is it just going away completely, or are we going to fund that through some other mechanism?
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question. It is my understanding that that will be taken care of in a different bill.
And I can confirm that. Are there any other questions of the sponsor? Representative Benjamin, for a question of the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of those 70% minority students that are served by the charter schools, how many of them are black?
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized, if you know.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question, Representative Benjamin. If my memory serves, it's 26%, but I'll double check. And I believe 47% Hispanic.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Representative Joseph, for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two distinct, I guess, points I need clarification on. The first one being the reversion provision, I understand its intent, but if I understand correctly with regard to the kinds of payments made, this bill, now as amended, would make the reversion of what specific payments go back if the charter school fails. Is it rent payments? Is it payments towards the mortgage? Like, what specific payments would revert back?
Representative Kennedy, recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question, Rep. Joseph. So if a charter school was non-renewed or terminated, what would revert is the unencumbered funds. So the unencumbered funds, all equipment, property purchased with district public, actually state public funds, would revert to the ownership of the district school board. So in the case of reversion of equipment, property, furnishings, it focuses on recoverable assets. So I think an analogy would be my legislative office is leased. I painted my legislative office. I can't scrape the paint off the walls and return the paint if I no longer leased that office. And the same would be true with charter schools. Things that are part of kind of normal operations couldn't be reverted. In terms of real estate, you know, it's very typical for the state to rent property like my own legislative office. And so that's reflected in this bill.
Representative Joseph, for another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the response. My question, the next question I have for you has to do with the source of the funds. As you, we heard from the commenter from the public about sharing the funds, I'm trying to understand why, or is there an opportunity to take the funds from some other allocation that the state can make other than making the district have to share these particular funds?
Senator Kennedy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we think about sharing, we're talking about 1.5 mils of property tax. And we are talking about a situation where we currently have an appropriation. The state is continuing to support schools with appropriation. It's not included in this bill, but it's included in the budget. And so what we have is a five-year glide path. We have a sharing in this bill of 20% of the 1.5 mils. And so this is the beginning of a way to make sure that charter school students who are 70% minority and 51% free and reduced lunch get closer to parity in terms of the resources that are provided to them.
One more question, Representative Joseph.
Thank you. I'm trying to understand the last part of your response. I was with you until you said it helps these minority students and those, a significant percentage that receive free lunches, closer to parity. So aren't most of the funds that we're talking about here in a lot of instances going to rent, which is never going to revert back? The students aren't directly getting the benefit of that funding. So I'm trying to understand your correlation between these two.
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So the location where students learn is part of what this 1.5 mils is utilized for, but there are other really important parts of this funding: computers, technology, software, tablets, buses, insurance. This pot of money pays for a lot of things that certainly include the spaces where students learn but are not limited to that. And so parity really matters.
Representative Skidmore for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kennedy, you didn't mention lunch in that list of things. So isn't there another funding source for that particular subject, that particular resource that is necessary? Why would it be coming out of these funds?
Representative Kennedy, you recognize?
Lunch, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. Lunch is not part of what these funds are utilized for. I think the point that I made about free and reduced lunch is this. I've been in the classroom for 20 years. I started a preschool in a homeless shelter 20 years ago, and I care a lot about kids who need opportunity. And it is a misconception, I think, on the part of many, and hopefully none of you in this room, because you all have been exposed to these issues and you understand these things. But charter school students oftentimes are those whose families are looking for a way out of really difficult situations. And it is important to me that I keep saying that the students in this population make up a significant majority are on free and reduced lunch because it represents who this population is about.
Representative Williams for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Maybe I heard something that I didn't think I heard. What does this funding has to do with minority students?
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. 70% of the students who attend charter schools are minority students.
Representative Williams, recognized.
Okay, and this bill is about minority students or all students?
Representative Kennedy, you recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Williams, this bill is about all students who attend charter schools, charter school students, of which 70% are minority and 51% are on free and reduced lunch.
Representative Williams, recognized.
If 70% is on free or reduced lunch, what does this have to do with minority students outside of us taking care of all the students?
I believe that question's been asked and answered. Do you have another question?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, the question is, if we're here to take care of all the students, identifying a certain set of children or identifying a certain area that you're representing and you're taking away from the public school system, this is my question. Why do we have to identify this is what this bill is about?
Okay, I believe she's answered that question. I believe she was also responding to the specific question you're objecting to by Representative Benjamin. We're going to move on. Representative Fine for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions that perhaps kind of get us refocused on the actual bill that we're talking about. Under your bill, are you taking any money away from the public school system?
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question. Charter school students are public school students. District school students are public school students. All of the students that we're talking about are public school students.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you. Did you share those statistics? I understand you've kind of lit a fire under a couple folks, but did you not share the statistics about the students? I don't even know that it was you that shared them, but were the statistics about these students that were shared simply to identify the population of students who attended these schools so folks would understand how they might differ than, for example, a private school, since some folks often attempt to mislead us by saying that charter schools are in fact private schools.
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I was doing research for this bill, I was frankly surprised by those numbers. I did not understand when I began working on this issue that that is the population that, you know, when those families make a choice to attend a charter school, they are choosing 20 to 30% less funding, and I just find that fundamentally unjust.
Follow up again?
Fine. You're
Thank
recognized.
You. We also heard in a question, I was very puzzled by this, that the paying of rent does not benefit the students who attend these schools. Maybe I don't understand how education works in these schools, but what would happen to these schools if they didn't pay their rent?
Representative Kennedy, recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fine, I have taught robotics classes, for example, in a tent when I ran out of space in my classroom. And though we made it work, it's not ideal. And so this, you know, whether space is rented, whether it's purchased, whether it's custom built, whether it's found, this is simply about where students gather to learn.
Follow up. I don't think
you're fine for another question.
Thank you. I don't know that you actually answered the question, so I'm going to try to make it a little more specific. The statement was made that paying rent did not benefit students who attended those schools. Would it not? I want to expose that for the incorrect statement that it is. Would it not be true that a school that did not pay rent would be forced by their landlord to close? That's what happens when you don't pay your rent.
Thank you. I think I can answer that question in the affirmative for you. Representative Fine, do you have any more questions?
I'm good.
Any further questions on the strike all amendment? On the strike all amendment, you have questions for a second bite at the apple. Okay, we're going to give you a little bit of leeway here, but we're coming to an end. So, Representative Joseph, you're recognized for another question on the strike all.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I was taking a look at the recommendation from the APAGA report that was published in December, and they recommended that capital outlay funding be distributed based on demonstrated need, regardless of public school type. So that would be inclusive of charter schools and traditional public schools, and that charter schools would be included in the district plant survey to best prioritize funds. So when we're contemplating issues of equity and justice, which it seems like we share those values, I'm trying to understand how this legislation takes that into account. So you might have a charter school across the street from a public school. I'm just making up a scenario. Sure. But there's more need at the traditional public school. But now with the impact of your bill, it's not necessarily going to the place with the most need, regardless of the population of the school. So separate from minority this or whatever that, I'm just talking about need for our children. How does your bill take that into account in terms of prioritization of need?
Representative Kennedy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Joseph, for that question. Let's talk about APAGA. It is my view that the APAGA study is deeply flawed. And the reason it is deeply flawed is because APAGA was asked to evaluate. They were asked to do some math. They were asked to do a quantitative analysis comparing the ways that charters are currently funded and how they would be funded under school district sharing millage. Now, instead of doing a piece of quantitative research, they got creative and they went qualitative. And here's what they did. They surveyed district finance folks and they asked them how they felt about whether a school district status quo method for allocating school capital funding, outlay capital funding, is equitable. And I know you will be shocked that the district folks thought it was just fine. And then they surveyed charter school principals. Now, not the money folks, but the principals, and they asked them the same question. Do you think that the way this is allocated is fair? Is it equitable? And I know you'll be shocked that they mostly did not think it was equitable. Now, my view, what a shockingly incredible waste of time and resources. And the more hours I spent on that APAGA study, the angrier I got, because I hate two things. I hate bureaucracy and I hate waste. And it is very frustrating to read a report like that when they were asked to do some math. We asked for facts and they gave us feelings. And my opinion about the APAGA study is that it is flawed and did not give us the data that we needed.
Representative Joseph, for a question. Representative Joseph, for a question.
Thank you. I can hear your frustrations with the APAGA study. My question is not necessarily directed about your opinions of APAGA nor their methodology. My question is really just, how does your bill account for the need that may be disparate within public schools, whether they be charter or traditional public schools?
Representative Kennedy.
So separate and apart from the APAGA study, I know you didn't get the data you were looking for from them, but perhaps do you have any data with regard to that, since it's your position that it didn't come from APAGA?
Okay, so two questions there. One based on whether the bill takes into account need, and the second question about data. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way districts determine need is based on a plant study. They utilize a district-wide study, and they make those determinations. And part of that is because their money is sort of pooled, and they make their own determinations. I kind of have to reference the APAGA study in order to answer your question, but APAGA suggested that the charter schools sort of become part of that. The reason that is fundamentally flawed is because of the very nature of the independence of a charter school versus a district school. That's entirely the point of charter schools. And so because charter schools operate independently and because they are designed to meet unique and different needs, their resources needs are different entirely from the district. And so to put the charter schools in a district plant survey like that would be in many ways like the fox watching the hen house, because the districts have absolutely zero reason to prioritize ensuring that the charters they compete with have facilities that meet their needs. And so the only equitable way, in my view and in the view of the bill, to deal with questions about need is to remember that this is really about students and not about buildings, and that when funds are distributed equitably based on student population, then those funds can be distributed in the way that meets those needs.
Representative Joseph, I'm going to give you one more question since this is your second round of questions.
I appreciate your latitude, Mr. Chair. So my other question has to do with, you just talked a lot about equity, the appropriations that the state gives to charter schools. It's my understanding that there is a separate appropriation that the state gives to charter school, gives to local public schools, and charter schools specifically have their own appropriation within that. So with your bill, it seems to me, and again, this is not my area of expertise, like I don't know how education funding all works, I'm learning, but it seems like charter schools get their own appropriation. Now, with this legislation, they'll be able to essentially double dip. So am I understanding that correctly, or do charter schools not get a separate appropriation for some of the things that are addressed in this legislation?
Representative Kennedy, do charter schools double dip?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question. No, they do not double dip.
Okay, are there any further questions? Representative Williams would like a second round.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm going back to my minority students. 70% attends charter schools. How many of those charter schools are owned by minority owners?
Representative Kennedy, is that in your bill?
No, Mr. Chair, it is not.
Not in the bill. For questions on the bill. Representative Benjamin, for a second round.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As it relates to this thing of capital outlay and the issue of double dipping, what is separately appropriated and what needs to be appropriated with regards to this bill?
Representative Kennedy, I think you have explained that, but you're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, as we know, one legislature cannot bind a future legislature. And so, for a number of years, the legislature has appropriated funding for charter schools because there has been no mechanism for 1.5 mils to be shared. And so what my bill does is create a 5-year glide path where a little more is shared every year over the course of 5 years. And it is, it has been the pattern of the legislature to appropriate funds. That has happened this year. And eventually, over time, charter school students will be on parity with district public school students in terms of the 1.5 mils.
Any further questions? Representative Benjamin for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so when you say in parity, are you saying that charter schools then will consume funds based upon their particular need, which may be at a less rate than public schools, traditional public schools?
Representative Kennedy, you can answer the question, but this is very similar to the question that I believe Representative Joseph asked. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Benjamin, this bill focuses on funding students. And so this would move to a mechanism where students would be funded at the same 1.5 mil level that all public school students receive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any further questions on the strike all amendment? Seeing no further questions on the strike all amendment, we'll move into public testimony. Alice Kears, waves and support. Sorry, that's the foundation for Florida's future. Lauren Jackson, City of Pembroke Pines, waves and support. Kathy Bayrimes, Kathy Bame, it rhymes with fame, I appreciate that. Just read it all together. Florida Education Association, waves and opposition. Sierra Roster, wishes to appear in person, is an opponent of the bill. Chris Moya, Charter Schools USA. Thank you. Raina Brown, City of Aventura, waves in support. Barney Bishop Consulting, waves in support. Nancy Lothar, Florida PTA, waves in opposition. Concludes the public testimony. Members, we are now in debate. Is there debate? We're still on the strike all. Okay. Seeing no debate, Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to close on your strike all amendment. You will have another opportunity to close on the bill.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Good job. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. We're back on the main bill. Seeing no public testimony, we are in debate on the main bill. Representative Gottlieb, in debate.
Just briefly, thanks, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a bill where, you know, I've said a couple times throughout the session that, you know, we as legislators have many masters. And I've got a really good A-rated private charter school, rather, in Pembroke Pines. And I know that they will greatly benefit from this. And so I applaud the bill for that. When I hear groups like FEA are against it and the impact that it may have to our traditional public schools, I'm conflicted. I hope to be up on it. I don't know that it's going to change. This is the first time that I'm seeing it, and I'm really not in the education space, so some of this kind of goes a little bit over my head. I appreciate the bill, and I appreciate the thoughtful questions. I do disagree with your interpretation of the OPAGA report. I've got it in front of me, and some of the metrics that they said that they used. I'm down on it today, but again, I do appreciate some of the benefits of the bill, and I appreciate your candor in answering the questions.
Thank you. Representative Masullo, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Kennedy, for presenting this bill and doing so very adroitly, I must say. This bill is simply about parity of capital funding in our public school system. Simply about that. And we can get a little granular on some of the details as far as the student population, while noteworthy on who goes to charter schools or traditional public schools. That's not as important as the fact that it's a child going one place or the other. And we need to fund it fairly, particularly regarding capital. Now, the districts have had the opportunity to share that funding for a few years. But for whatever reason, they have not done so in an equitable fashion. As we have seen property values increase, the delta on that difference has also increased. I'd like to think property values will continue to increase in our state. And when you look at the staff analysis, you'll see in the first year out of that $3.4 billion, they're going to only share 2%. 2%. It's a very small amount. And when you look at the numbers, the FTE numbers, as we change education, and believe me, education is changing in our state, we're seeing more students go to other areas than traditional public schools, including charter schools. And it's only right that we fund them fairly, not disproportionately, but fairly. That's all your bill does, and I'm up on it.
Thank you. Representative Williams, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I think about the bill itself, when you make the statement of 70% of the students are minority students, it goes back to public schools. Charter schools are public schools, but the buildings are not public buildings. So we have privately owned companies making money off taxpayers' dollars. This is a concern, and that is a reality. You're using the minority students to make money, but you're not holding the charter schools that's privately owned to the same standards that you're holding the public school systems to. And when we're using taxpayer dollars, I think everybody needs to be fed all the information that's taken away from our public school system. I will be down on the bill today, and hopefully that we can come up with something different than what we're looking at to make me feel more comfortable by using the taxpayer dollars.
Thank you. Representative Hunchowski, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm echoing some of the similar concerns. And I think parity is great, but we don't have parity in the requirements of building schools. The traditional public schools are held to a different building standard. They're used as hurricane shelters. There are lots of other things going on. And I'm just concerned about, I would have felt better if we were adding more of an appropriation to at least make up for this, this go around to really see what the impact is. I will continue to review this as we go forward. I do appreciate very much Representative Masullo's amendment protecting and making sure that our municipal charter schools are not getting caught up in unintended consequences. But for today, I will be down on this.
Thank you. Representative Andrade, in debate.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think every year we have a similar debate about the topic of charter schools. And I just want to reiterate a couple misconceptions that keep getting repeated every year, despite always being addressed. First, charter schools get graded. Students get tested. They get assessed. We know, based on those results, that charter school students perform better than their public school, traditional government-run school counterparts. We also know the achievement cap is smaller in charter schools and in traditional run government schools. Students who end up going to charter schools have a much better chance of finding success by going to that charter school for the most part, the majority of time. If a principal at a charter school is found to be embezzling money, state money, that charter school will likely shut down. How many schools have been shut down, government-run schools have been shut down when it's been discovered that a principal at a government-run school has been embezzling money? And it does happen. I grew up in Broward County. I'm very familiar with it. When charter schools have examples of financial impropriety, those charter schools cease to exist. The same cannot be said about government-run schools in Florida. So absolutely, we should be working on parity, because the safe bet is charter schools. They've proven it with their assessments. They've proven it with the fact that, I filed an eviction on a charter school in Pensacola. when it was determined that the principal was embezzling money. The school was embezzling money and misusing it. Teachers have to be certified the same way in charter schools as government-run schools. The gripe about this money being used on students who qualify as public school students it falls flat for me. And I find myself debating every year just because it gets me so worked up with the bad faith arguments related to these charter schools. So thank you very much, Representative Kennedy, for bringing this bill, and I plan on supporting it.
Thank you. Representative Driscoll, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the robust conversation today. Just wanted to hit on a few things because I think it's important to remember context. Because without context, some of the things that we've heard both on both sides of the debate might sound shocking to the other. But for a bit of context, I've served in the legislature for the past 5 years, and I can certainly remember some budgets in prior years where we awarded, as a legislature, no public education capital outlay dollars to our traditional public schools, and instead that money would be given to the charter schools, writ large. And that's been happening for a number of years. And so I don't think it's the appropriate context or history to say that the charter schools have been lacking in parity. I think it's also very important to understand the policy choices that this legislature has made with respect to charter schools, and doing so knowing the practices of charter schools, which frequently target minority populations. That is part of how the charter schools have these demographics that we've heard about that tend to skew heavily minority. So let's just be clear about the context. Let's also be clear that many different things can be true at the same time, right? And what do I mean by that? I mean, it's possible for there to be some success stories with charter schools. I'm not here to say that all are bad, but we also can't deny that there are many that are not up to snuff. If you consider in Miami-Dade County, for example, the outcomes for the minority students in charter schools are markedly worse than they are for the minority students in the traditional public schools. Many things can be true at the same time, but probably because all of these things are true at the same time, that's why the people of Florida, in their wisdom, established a state constitution that required a single uniform system of high quality and adequately funded public schools. What we've seen with the advent of charter schools is a divergence in policy, a divergence in funding that is effectively creating or has created two separate school systems. And if we want to focus on what's best for our kids, then let's do that. When you consider that roughly 12.8%, I know it's less than 13% of Florida's students attend charter schools, math was never my strong suit, but I think that means roughly 87% or so of our students attend traditional public schools. And yet, even though the majority of our students are there, we are consistently diverting funds away from our traditional public schools. I still don't understand why we do that. And I do understand the arguments for choice and that maybe some of those outcomes have been better for some parents, but when you look at it, when you look at the system as a whole and what's best for our kids at the whole, it seems like we are oftentimes cutting off our nose to spite our face. Rep. Williams had asked a question about the demographic for ownership, and I'd written down a similar question. I'd be curious to know that, the demographic of those who own these charter schools or who are benefiting from these contracts. My suspicion is that it does not reflect the population of students that are being served. So there seem to be many open questions about this bill still. We still have some time before it gets to the floor, so hopefully conversations can continue. What we don't want to do is leave any student in the lurch. But as I understand this bill and the strike all and the amendments that have been added, this really is about the businesses, the contracts, the leases for these buildings, not really school performance, not really providing the students with the things that they need, some of the things we talked about today, like lunch or books or whatever. So more open questions than answers, and we need to get those answered. So I'll be down on this today. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benjamin, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am one who understands the importance of choice. I've exercised choice from my own kids, from parochial schools to outside the boundaries of where we live to magnet programs within the traditional public schools. And my students and my kids have done well with regards to the choices that we have made for them. My kids are currently in public schools, and they've been in public schools for several years now, mostly in the magnet programs. More black kids use traditional public schools than any other choice provided in our marketplace right now. My district is predominantly black. And so it concerns me, even in your numbers of 70%, only 26% of those folks are black, which means that even less people in my district probably uses the charter school or even the private school option with regards to, as it relates to how it varies in terms of their use of traditional public schools. And so anytime traditional public schools are going to be, may be negatively affected, I think it's incumbent upon me to make sure that my vote protects them in that way. In this particular instance, I don't see why we just don't, if we really want charter schools to have the things that we want them to have, why we just don't appropriate additional monies for them as we've done in the past. And for those reasons, today, I'm down.
Members, is there any further debate? Representative Fine, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 80 years ago, there were folks in this country who used to make an argument that you could have separate but equal schools and everything would turn out just fine. Unfortunately, 70 years ago, next month, our Supreme Court said that isn't okay. In Brown versus Board, a place I encourage you all to visit in Arkansas, it's a national park that you can go and see for yourselves. I proudly took my sons there. But what's ironic in the debate today is now we hear the advocates against this bill make an argument again for separate but unequal schools. They don't want a separate but equal. They're not even willing to go there. They're actually advocating for separate and unequal schools. Charter schools are public schools. Government schools are public schools. All students that attend both are public school students. Yet one school, students get a certain amount of money. If they choose to go to a different public school, they get a substantially amount less money. These schools are separate, but unequal. So I would like to answer some questions and provide some accurate context. Context is valuable, but only if it's accurate. It is accurate to say that the state provides capital outlay funding for charter schools. That is accurate, but we need accurate context. The reason for this is local school districts have decided that they, as a matter of public policy, wish to have separate but unequal schools. And by the way, while it is true that more minority students go to government schools than charter schools on a percentage basis, which is what the bill sponsor attempted to say, they predominantly choose when it is available to go to a charter school. One of the schools, by the way, that is unequal. And so in order to fix the public policy decisions of local school districts, the legislature has stepped in and provided capital outlay funding to make up for that public policy disgrace to be separate but unequal on the part of local school districts. We don't want to do that. We do that to fix the problem. And so that couple of $100 million every year that the legislature is giving in order to fix the separate but unequal policy of local school districts does come at the expense of other educational students. It could go to all of our public schools, both government and charter. It could go to our public colleges. It could go to our public universities. It all comes from the same pot. The purpose of this bill is to fix that at the local government level so those couple of $100 million can be used in that way. We hear concern about who owns the schools. People are making money off the schools. You know, people make money off schools in lots of different ways. Somebody gets paid to build the schools. It ain't government workers that are out there building these $30 and $40 and $50 million monoliths. Private companies provide materials, they provide food, they provide all sorts of services to all schools, all public schools, whether they are government or whether they are charter. But at the end of the day, what I think about in this separate but unequal system is charter schools in my district. I don't know why. I have a lot in South Brevard. I think we counted once. It was like 13 in my district alone. I don't know why, but we do. And I think of Odyssey Charter School. There's actually now two of them. Because the school was so popular among primarily minority students whose parents were begging to get their kids into the school that they built another one. They aren't given money for transportation, yet they figured out with their separate but unequal funding how to provide buses to get kids to the school. They figured out with their separate but unequal funding how not to provide the same sort of lunches that my oldest son complains about at his government-run school, but to create fresh food and fresh lunches for every student that they serve, provide uniforms for every student so children weren't teased based on the quality of the clothes that they wear. Those schools are separate but unequal, but they're fighting really hard to provide great education to parents who choose to send their students there. No one makes them. So when we pass this bill today, what we are saying as a legislature, much like the Supreme Court said 70 years ago, separate but equal or separate but unequal isn't going to work in the state of Florida. Where you go to school is your choice. You're going to get treated the same no matter where you go. This is a great bill, and I'm proud to support it.
You've already debated?
I have not debated, sir.
Okay, Representative Joseph, you're recognized in debate.
I was not planning to debate, but some comments were made about
I ask you to keep your comments on the subject of the bill, but
right, that,
welcome to.
That's what we're that's what debate is
for. I got you.
Okay. With respect to separate and equal, we need to make sure that equal is actually equal. And in this state, the legislative body has redefined a charter school to be a public school. In a lot of states, charter schools are not public schools. That's fine. When this bill passes along party lines, we know we've already heard what the underlying premises are. What some people who oppose it might have issue with or concerns about are the things that we heard today, which have nothing to do with some of the arguments that I've heard just a moment ago, and have everything to do with making sure that parity is achieved, not along charter school versus traditional public school lines, but in terms of where the resources are actually needed. So when we see things that identify need, it should be need based on whatever the school is, because the underlying goal is to make sure that the student has what they need to be successful. So a lot of these other arguments that are getting people worked up, I would posit are red herrings, because that's not the point. The point is to give the child what they need to succeed in this state and ideally beyond that. That being said, some concerns that have been raised have to do with the consistent and persistent funding of charter schools in this state. And now, granted, all charter schools are not the same. I have some of the best charter schools in my district, but in Miami-Dade County, we also have some of the worst charter schools. Leader Driscoll made reference a moment ago to some of the outcomes in Miami-Dade County, and I will never forget it. It was one of our first legislative delegation meetings sitting in the public school room, and they went through the statistics, and the graduation rates for minority students specifically, Black and Hispanic students, were in traditional public schools in excess of 80%, but in charter schools somewhere between 20 and 30%. That is not a made-up number. That is a real number impacting real students in our real public education system, both traditional and charter. And it would be irresponsible of us not to take those kinds of things into account, given the statistics that were identified today about 70% of these students being in these schools. Now, there were lots of myths identified and other myths perpetrated, but none of that even matters. What matters is that the kids get what they need to be successful. So nobody that I know of, at least in our caucus, is advocating for separate and unequal. We are insisting on not separate and equal, regardless of where you are, so that the standards apply, whether it's in terms of making sure that the teachers that are teaching our students have the qualifications to do so, and if anybody's accused of embezzlement and convicted of embezzlement, that they actually, regardless of what school system they're participating in, that they deal with the consequences. Like, I feel like we're just throwing around little things to get people riled up, but the point is still the point. We just want to make sure all of our children are educated, and to try to recast the very, quite frankly, racist history of what led to Brown versus Board of Education and inject this into this conversation without making the proper connections is irresponsible and quite frankly offensive.
Thank you. Representative Kennedy, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Leader Driscoll, Representative Williams, Representative Joseph, so many others, Representative Gottlieb, thank you for the robust debate. I believe that we all want what's good for kids. We want what is going to make our students in the state of Florida successful. I believe that that's what you want, and that's what I want too. I just want to respond to a few things that have been mentioned in debate, and this has been a great conversation, and so I'll try to keep it brief, but I do think it's important to address just a couple of things. The money that we're talking about is capital funding. Capital funding is a very specific bucket. It relates very specifically to space for kids to learn, technology, software, insurance, buses, a few other items, but that's the dollars. That's the bucket that we're talking about. And it's very, very specific under the law. Representative Joseph, you mentioned some numbers related to charters in your district, and I would love to talk more about that because I'm very interested in that. But I will say this. Charter schools frequently are very specialized, and some of them work with at-risk students. So I'm very interested to learn if perhaps some of that data is reflected in that reality, but I'd love to get with you and talk more about that. We talked about responsibility for tax dollars related to achievement. Florida statutes require that the Florida Department of Education publish a report every year comparing district public school students with public charter school students on a number of metrics. And I just want to talk about those because if we all believe that it is about what is good for students, then performance needs to be the metric that we are primarily focused on. In achievement, in 58 out of the 77 comparisons, charter schools outperformed district schools. In the achievement gap amongst minorities, public charter schools outperformed public district schools in 18 out of 22 comparisons. This just comes from the Department of Education report. And in learning gains, which as a teacher, I would posit is the most critical part, In 96 comparisons, charters won in 81 out of the 96. Now, I look forward to continued conversations on these issues, but I believe with you that this has to be about what is good for students, and I ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kennedy, having closed on her bill, we'll now move to the vote. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leake?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
No.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Grant? Gregory?
Yes.
Hawkins? Honchowski?
No.
Joseph?
No.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers? Skidmore?
No.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko? Williams?
No.
Thank you, members. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show CS for HB 1259 reported favorably. Next up, House Bill 7057 by Representative G. Lombardo. Representative G. Lombardo, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, Committee. This bill is a response to the last few years of national disasters. The bill provides best practices for debris removal. It puts some recommendations in place for local governments to better prepare, to put finance plans in place. It also and also permitting teams together to expedite the permitting process. It ensures that after disaster, a private property owner or business owner is protected from significant changes to the local government comp plans, and it extends the toll of a permit. This bill also directs DEM to admin a revolving loan program, which will have $1 million of non-reoccurring from general revenue, $10 million from the federal grant trust fund, non-reoccurring, and it's a contingent upon FEMA reimbursements. It also puts $50 million back into the local grant that we've done recently, and it puts that as a revolving as well, and that is the bill.
Thank you, members. Are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Gottlieb for a question of the sponsor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative G. Lombardo, I've got a question as it relates to lines 217 through 227, which is the liability piece.
That's the amendment.
Oh, that's on the amendment?
Thank you. That's on the amendment?
I apologize. Okay, I'll stand down. Thank you.
Okay, members, are there questions of the sponsor on the bill? Seeing no questions of the sponsor on the bill, Representative G. Lombardo, you're recognized to explain Amendment 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment provides that the tolling extension of the permits and other authorizations under the declared emergency apply retroactively to September 28th of 2022, prohibits county municipal utilities within 100 miles of the landfall of Hurricane Ian or Nicole from proposing or adopting a moratorium on construction, reconstruction, redevelopment of properties damaged from these storms. And it also provides public utilities are not liable for damages based on a whole or in part of changes in the reliability, continuity, or quality of utility service which arises out of emergency or disaster, and that is the amendment.
Representative Gottlieb for a question on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. So, Rep. Gina Lombardo, my question is why looking at 219 through 223, why is that piece necessary?
Representative G. Lombardo, you're recognized.
So, with the utility liability piece, this does not affect any customer in particular, and I think it's important to note that that the PSC is what is governs over our investor-owned utilities, and so with doing this, I mean you have to look at the PSC's responsibility for rates and reliability in the storm plans. So if we allow for frivolous lawsuits for reliability after a storm, that could cause significant impacts to rates because the PSC could allow them to recover their rates through any litigation that goes through. So that's why this is important.
Representative Gottlieb for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. So what this kind of brings to mind is like the nursing home situations where, and I don't know who was to blame for the failure to provide electricity there, but would this insulate the electric companies in that type of situation?
Representative G. Lombardo, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, no, this bill does not discriminate between any other specific customer. It does not attack like certain incidents in a situation where there's negligence. This does not cover that.
Representative Gottlieb for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. How about lines 228 to 231? In that section, the bill references that there may be a conflict with other Florida law, and if so, this bill governs. Are you aware of any other section of Florida law that this does in fact conflict with?
Representative G. Lombardo, you recognized?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not.
Any further questions of the sponsor?
No, Chair.
We're on the amendment. Any further questions of the sponsor? Representative Hunchowski for a question on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. And I just have one question. So on lines 22 to 23, when we're talking about the emergency or disaster, it says including but not limited to a state of emergency declared pursuant to section 252.36. What would be another type of emergency or disaster that would fall under this that isn't part of like an emergency declared by the governor?
Representative G. Lombardo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at emergency or disaster. I mean, I guess we could, I mean, a cyber attack. I mean, I think, you know, if we've looked at emergencies or disasters in the last few years, especially with all the hurricanes, it's defined. I see what you're saying, but it could, I mean, if anything, it could probably go and go through the courts. If it could, cyber attack. I mean,
Representative Petrovsky for a follow up.
Yeah, and I just bring that up because I understand when there's an emergency declared by the governor, and that makes sense. And in the case of COVID,
is this a question?
Yeah, it is. And I understand like COVID would be an example of that, and there are other examples of that. My concern is I'm not clear as to what would be an emergency or a disaster beyond that of where this would be warranted. And I'm wondering if you would be willing to have a discussion offline on that to see if we can kind of narrow that down a bit more.
Representative G. Lombardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm always happy to have a discussion. I look at the situation has to be an emergency or disaster. So, and, you know, I see where you're talking about the 22 through 23, but it does also reference 252.36. So I'm happy to have a discussion, but I mean, I think an emergency disaster kind of covers it. And, you know, the PSC is not going to go and define what an emergency disaster is, but, you know, if it does happen to go through court or anything like that, I'm sure there would be, you know, some sort of, you know, finding on that. So
Any further questions of the sponsor? Further questions of the sponsor? Seeing no further questions of the sponsor. Now move into public testimony. Jamie Merchant, appearing as a Lee County resident, appearing for herself, waves and support. Slater Bayless, Environmental Defense Fund, waves and support. Seeing no further public testimony, we are now on debate on the amendment. Is there debate on the amendment? Representative Humchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Leak. And just to follow up on my questions, I totally get it when the governor has declared an emergency, but when you don't define what an emergency or a disaster is, I mean, what do they say? It's one person's lack of planning is another person's emergency. So I just want to be clear on how we're defining the ones that are not the governor declaring an emergency. Just to make sure that it is what everyday people would consider an emergency or a disaster and not a lack of planning or something that the companies did to cause that emergency or disaster. Thank you.
Representative Gottlieb, in debate.
Thank you, Chair, and I'm going to be brief. I'm up on the bill. I just think this section in particular is, from a lawyer's perspective, is drafted so overly broad. I mean, what it says is that a public utility is not liable for damages based in whole or in part on the reliability, continuity, or quality of utility services which may arise in any way out of an emergency or disaster. So when it says arise in any way, that could be something that's not really part of the actual emergency, but something part of the infrastructure. And I know that there's a lot of infrastructure lawsuits, and that's what this is tailored to prevent. Like, it took 10 days to turn my electric on. We all understand there's a need for the grid. I just think that this could be a little bit more narrowly tailored, this section in particular, to exclude the kind of bad faith claims that have been coming at the utility companies rather than legitimate claims, because I think that this is painting with a very broad brush when that's not necessarily needed. So I don't love that portion of the amendment, but again, I'm up on the bill.
Thank you. Members, any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized to close on your amendment number one.
Oh, wait.
Oh, Representative G. Lombardi.
I was like, well.
Unless Gottlieb wants to do it for you.
Oh.
Representative G. Lombardi, you're recognized to close on your amendment number one.
Wave close.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. We had the public testimony on the bill previously. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Is there any debate on the bill as amended? Seeing no debate on the bill as amended?
Yeah. Representative Cheney.
Representative Cheney, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair Leak. Thank you, Representative G. Lombardo. As you know, our Representative Garrison took our class down after the storm, and we saw the disaster. And I read through your bill, and it seems like you're solving a lot of problems that we saw from Ian that could have probably been handled a lot better. I particularly like how the derelict vessel component has been extended. As we saw, so many boats were just tossed everywhere. And fortunately, my district has not been hit by a significant hurricane, but if we did, we would have the same situation with derelict vessels and infrastructure that your bill addresses. So I think you've done a really good job of protecting us and preparing us for future disasters with this bill.
Representative Honchowski, in debate.
Thank you, Chair Leak. And just quickly, I want to say, Representative Gia Lombardo, I think there are a lot of good things in this bill. Like I said, my one concern is that area that's a little broad, and I hope we can address that going forward. And I thank you for your work on that, and I thank you for the work you've done in your community in the aftermath of the natural disaster that you guys went through.
Any further debate? Representative Joseph, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be up on this today. I'm going to request, either in your closing or just we can talk about it before it gets to the floor, I want to understand the retroactive application of local prohibition, like the local prohibition of the bill, and how it could impact existing comprehensive plans and reliance on certain orders, like, because some of them are already there, and I want to make sure I understand the interplay. And also, if you could address in your close any feedback you may have gotten from local governments or DEM.
Thank you, members. Any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative G. Lombardo, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for all the feedback. My door is always open to have a conversation. On the retroactively part, it's due because it's September 28th of 2022, because that's the day where the hurricane hit. So that's why that's why we put it retroactively. And I think it's really important for folks to know is that the PSC creates the requirements for our public or our utilities. And I think it's really important as they set these requirements and our utilities meet those requirements, there is a process in which somebody can go to the PSC, make a claim, and then and the PSC finds if any of our utilities are at fault or not. So I think, you know, the PSC does a lot of our regulation, and they make sure and they govern over our utilities. And I think that's where that needs to be. And if frivolous lawsuits come up, the challenge is now they have to take those and they can, you know, recover their rates through this litigation. So, I hope I get your, I think I got your support on the bill, but I'm open to have any dialogue or any questions that you may have. Thank you, and I close.
Thank you, Cheryl. Please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hawkins? Hunchowski?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf? Silvers? Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you, members. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show HB 7057 reported favorably. This concludes our committee agenda. Representative McClure moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.